WGN Radio. Most Mondays, we visit with Elise Glink, and today is no exception to that. She's the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Welcome back, Elise.
Nice to be here, John. Happy April Fool's Day.
I was talking to you a little bit, or talking about you just a little bit ago, about renting, about buying, about debt we carry. You also have is it a new newsletter that you're putting out?
It's not so new anymore. It's called Love, Money, and Real Estate, and you can find it at my website, thinklink.com.
On the real estate front, a lot of people who own homes right now are wishing they were renters. Is that right?
Well, they are. It's expensive to own a home, and about 28% of homeowners right now are considering going back to renting, which I think is actually a long-term mistake. But nearly half of homeowners spend more money owning a home than they did on renting, and that, I think, is scaring people.
Well, of course they do. I mean, it would cost more to own something than to rent something. You also have upkeep and improvements that you put into it. That's equity, right?
Yeah, you do. And hopefully the home goes up in value. We're having a little trouble with that in the Chicago metropolitan area compared to other places. But people are surprised, I think. You know, a lot of people want to be a homeowner, and it's, I think, a very good long-term thing to invest your money in. But when they start getting bills like $4,400 for maintenance on the home every year, or they spend an extra $4,000 they didn't plan on little renovations, or I need to buy a new couch, or how about curtains, or what have you. You've got utilities, you've got property taxes, not a low number here in the state. And then there's homeowners insurance. And so, you know, homeowners, they add all that up. They realize that numbers are going up because of inflation, and they get a little bit worried. What I think they fail to realize is just how expensive it is to rent these days. And there are a lot of people who are finding that they're priced out of the rental market of where they want to live, school district, simply because there are very few homes for rent, and those rents are pretty high.
Those numbers you just clicked off weren't just sort of made up numbers. These are the average costs in 2023. Homeowners spend $4,300 on maintenance, $3,800 on renovations, $5,400 on utilities, about $3,000 on property taxes. Don't we wish? And $3,000? If you're paying $2,904, that's the actual number on property taxes. By Chicagoland standards, you should be happy about that, right?
Yeah, I think you'd be really happy about that. You know, and you'd say to yourself, well, why can't we have the taxes that, say, Florida has? Well, okay, you can go to Florida. But boy, have you seen the property insurance bills that people are getting in Florida and other coastal cities right now? So, you know, down in Florida, you have people whose homeowners insurance has quadrupled in the last 4 years. I think I would rather pay a little bit more in property taxes and a lot less in homeowners insurance. But hey, everybody to their own, right?
I guess so. In theory, you get something for your property taxes. That's the schools and fire and roads. And if it's insurance, just I presume that's because of the weather in Florida. Is that what that is?
It is. It's hurricanes. It's the rains. It's the flooding that's starting to happen. There's just, you know, a lot of crazy stuff. California sees it, too. I don't know if you saw, but U.S. Highway 1 had another chunk in the Big Sur area that literally fell down the cliff. And they've closed U.S. Highway 1, I think, 42 miles worth of it again, just because the road is giving way and there's just pieces of it missing.
What's this Alliance Life study that you sent to producer Pete and me? What are they looking at there, Elise?
Well, first of all, it's Financial Literacy Month, so that's something near dear to my heart. As you know, with my Best Money Moves financial wellness company, Alliance Life Insurance Company of North America does a quarterly market perceptions study. And what they're looking at is whether inflation has hindered our ability to save for retirement and manage our finances. So they take a look at the study and a bunch of different things that go into it. And so one of the things that they look at are savings constraints. So what is hindering our ability to save and achieve our financial goals? And this quarter, 69% of people who responded to the survey said they were unable to contribute to their savings because of ongoing inflation. And millennials, who you know, are particularly affected, probably because of the age, right? Little kids, they're not quite into sort of the mid-level career stuff going on where they're making a little bit more money. They said 74% of millennials surveyed had reduced savings contributions. They're having even more trouble than Gen X and baby boomers.
Did you also say that what percentage of Americans are tapping their savings because of inflation?
Well, a significant number are doing that. So 42% of respondents say they're withdrawing from their retirement savings due to inflation. And Hispanics in particular said they are doing that at a rate of 60%, which is much, much higher even. You know what's interesting about this, John, is I've had a number of conversations with fairly large companies over the last couple of weeks. One company has 5,000 employees. One company has 10,000 employees. Another one has 3,000 employees. All three of them said that they were seeing a significant uptick in the number of people using their 401ks as checkbooks again. Now, we haven't seen so much of this over the last couple of years because the government paid money to everybody during the pandemic. You know, you were at home, a lot of people lost their jobs, and they just sent, remember, we used to just get those checks and we were talking about them. Well, that money has apparently disappeared back into the economy, which is doing well, but people are withdrawing from their retirement savings. And this is really concerning HR departments, because what the last thing they want to see is people start to deplete those 401k accounts, particularly as they get into their later years of a career.
But incomes are up, right?
Yeah, and that's the other thing that's sort of interesting. So the latest figures that came out from Bureau of Economic Analysis. So they issued a release about the February 2024 numbers, and they said that personal income increased $66.5 billion in February. That was up 0.3%. Disposable personal income also increased by $50.3 billion. Consumer spending increased by $146 billion. So that was more than the income that increased. And then the personal savings amount, though, which is encouraging, was 3.6%. So you look at those numbers, and what it says to me as somebody who's watched this for a long time is we are making a little more money, and we do have a little bit more disposable income, but our spending has way outpaced that. And so even though we're saving some, 3.6%, we're actually spending quite a bit more. And I think that's where this comes from, that there's a group of us who are just not making ends meet, and we're still looking for cash to pay our bills wherever we can find it.
And that's not people spending the money willy-nilly, but that's inflation we're talking about. I presume that's just things you need to live, huh?
Yeah, I think that's where people are spending the money. We do see people doing the buy now, pay later, right? Where it doesn't hit your credit report and you can spread out the payments over 4 to 6 weeks. There's, you know, almost 40% of Americans have tried something like that already. We're also seeing credit card amounts go up. So people are carrying more debt. They're paying off that debt more slowly. We're starting to see in the automotive world, people with car loans are starting to delay those payments. They're starting to pay a little bit later. Those numbers are starting to rise. So, yeah, there's definitely some constraints going on. And the big concern for everybody is inflation.
And I guess one inflationary number that you talked about a little while ago would be rent. If you say, I can't afford a house, I'm going to rent, rents are up. And the cost of home ownership is up and the inventory is still tight.
Yeah. And this is sort of interesting, John. You know, we see news from the Fed that, you know, the overall rate of inflation has come down quite a bit. Last year, it was like 9% at its height. Yeah. It's now down to 2.8%. But the problem that people are having trouble wrapping their minds around is that now prices are higher. So they may stabilize and just go up a little bit every year from this point, but they're still pretty darn high. And so when they get high, that impacts what you're spending and where you're spending it.
Okay, that's all the time we have today. You can find out more from Elise Link. I have more questions to ask, but not more time to ask them. Let's visit again, and we'll pick it up here next Monday, all right?
Sounds good, John.
That's Elise Glink. You can click on thinkglink.com. She's the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. John Williams, happy Monday to you. Jim Dahlke's here, national editor at American Inno. You can click on chicagoinno.com to read stuff like this. Hey, Jim, welcome back to the show.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Cameo is one of the companies that you all are reporting about this week. What's the reporting on Chicago-based Cameo?
Yeah, so Cameo, this is the celebrity shout-out app that's born here in Chicago, an app that lets you connect with celebrities and purchase a video where they can send you or your loved ones a little video hello message. Business that really took off during COVID. It's raising new funding as it announced in an SEC filing last week, but under much different terms than it raised funding at its peak in early 2021. So, you know, back in 2021, Cameo was really kind of at its absolute height. It was going gangbusters during the pandemic. People were locked in their houses. Celebrities could not go out on gigs, could not connect with fans. And Cameo really, really exploded. It raised $100 million in funding at a $1 billion valuation. Flash forward to this week, it's raising $28 million at a less than $100 million valuation. So the company, on paper, worth much less, 90% haircut in valuation compared to what it was raising at the height during COVID times. And so it's a significant move for Cameo. This follows a string of layoffs that they've gone through over the last couple of years, trimming their headcount. And, one thing that the CEO told us last week was that, yes, it's been a few difficult years for the business, but they believe that they are on pace to grow. So they said over the last 8 months or so, the company has actually been growing. They're profitable. And believe it or not, they're hiring back actually some of the folks that they had let go in that earlier round of layoffs. And so the company believes that it's got some funding here that can put itself on some solid footing as it looks to kind of reinvent itself after coming down from Earth a little bit following some really, really fast growth during the pandemic.
Is it your reporting that they made mistakes, or was that billion-dollar valuation just a function of, like you said, the pandemic and there was no other way to communicate? You know, like if you almost eliminate the billion, maybe instead of 100 million, they would have grown to 110, 120, and they would not have suffered that bump. But that was inevitable because of the pandemic, and that they're worth 100 million now doesn't mean they did anything wrong. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. This is not necessarily a story of mistakes. I think this is, Cameo isn't an example of, the businesses that were receiving a ton of money in the part of the pandemic where venture capitalists were trying to fund as many businesses as they possibly could. Interest rates were cheap, money was cheap, and venture capital had money to spend, and they wanted to make sure that they were deploying that capital in some of the most ambitious startups around. And Cameo at the time was absolutely that. They were going gangbusters, really, really seeing some impressive growth. And Cameo is not the only startup that's facing, this type of economic challenge. As we've talked about on many Mondays, it is not the same environment today as it was in late 2020, early 2021, when, the startup environment was just much more friendly. The terms of your deals were much, much better. Now, venture funding is still available to you, but, venture capitalists are going to be much more selective in where they're deploying their capital today than they were 3 years ago. And so Cameo by no means kind of the only business in this position. Now their challenge is to look to see where they can grow from here.
So the hot topic now isn't Cameo videos, but it's AI and it's robotics and the combination of robots and AI. What's your story about that today?
Yeah, one emerging trend we've really seen in tech over the last few years are these humanoid robots. So these are, robots that are human-like. They have arms, they have legs, they have wiggly fingers, they have a head with a screen with a face sometimes and eyeballs and a neck. And, robots in the workplace are certainly not uncommon. We've seen robots in the workplace for decades. But one thing that is new are these kind of human-like, humanoid robots that are in the workplace. And so, in many ways, kind of these are your next quote unquote coworkers. They are in logistics businesses. They're in the warehouse. We've seen more funding for these humanoid robot startups than ever, including a company called Figure AI, a startup in Silicon Valley, raised $675 million. They are going to work with BMW to be using their human-like robots on their robot on their factory floors. They say that their robot's going to actually be the very first human-like robot to join an automotive line. So Figure's not the only one. Tesla's got their own version of this. So Elon Musk has created what they've called Optimus. This is another human-like robot. They say that this robot's going to do pretty much any task for humans that are, quote, unsafe, repetitive, or boring. They even released a video of this robot folding a T-shirt.
That's interesting because I could see how that would be boring and maybe you suffer a repetitive use injury if you're just folding T-shirts all day for some purpose. So I'm okay with the robots doing that. It's funny you mentioned Elon Musk. I was reading about Tesla and his use of robotics, and when he was looking at the assembly line for the vehicle, he noticed that sometimes things were going slower because the robot was inefficient. There were some tasks that human beings could do faster. So he is, at least as of Walter Isaacson's publication of his book anyway, he wasn't all about robots. He was all about whatever goes quickest, you know, most efficiently. And sometimes it's human beings.
You know, and that's actually ironically kind of the bullish case for these humanoid robots, because our world is built for humans, you know, for to bend at the knees and pick up with your arms. And you know, the folks who are behind these humanoid robots are saying that they're actually going to work. They're going to function better for us in the factory floors, for example, because our world just is built, you know, in a place for humans. And so a human-like robot will actually fit in well. And so, Goldman Sachs just put out a report that they said that the market for humanoid robots is projected to reach $38 billion by 2035. That's up sixfold from their own projections just 1 year ago, which really shows you how quickly artificial intelligence has made advancements and how actually the affordability has come down too. They say that there could be more than 250,000 humanoid robot shipments in 2030, mostly in industrial sectors.
Really? 250,000 human robot shipments in this year? Is that what you said?
By 2030.
By 2030. Okay. Talk to me about Alex Zorn's story, Evergreen Climate Innovations. What's that about?
Yeah, we got a couple of groups here in Chicago that received some federal funding in the latest government funding bill signed by President Biden the other week. One is Evergreen Climate Innovations. This is a nonprofit venture accelerator that helps support entrepreneurs and startups that are working on bringing climate technologies to market. They received about $475,000 to help continue to boost those startups here locally. And then another group that we talked about, MHUB, they're a manufacturing innovation center here in Chicago working on hard tech startups, hardware startups. They received about $675,000 from the federal government here. So some nice money here from from the federal government that's going to some local organizations that are going to help support tech startups here in the city.
When they say climate innovation or climate tech, what does that mean? What kind of companies are those? Are those batteries or solar power? What is that?
Yeah, it's kind of all of the above. Clean energy, certainly battery. We're seeing a lot of innovations around battery. That's a big area of growth we've seen even here in Chicago. There's a handful of companies working on that, better batteries, more environmentally safe batteries. And, we've seen that with fuel as well. LanzaJet, a company we've talked about that's taking alcohol and turning it into sustainable aviation fuel. So there's definitely quite a bit of energy and momentum in Chicago around climate tech. And it's really a broad umbrella.
Okay, let's leave it there today then. Jim Dahlke from American Inno. You can click on ChicagoInno.com and let's visit next week, Jim.
Thanks, John.
Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's more business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Matter, the healthcare incubator and innovation hub in Chicago, says applications for a new healthcare accelerator program are now being accepted. Matter and CareQuest Innovation Partners opened applications for Smile Health. The program's in its third year for startups focused on the integration of oral health and overall health. Despite growing evidence that oral health is connected to general health, only 37% of Americans saw both a physician and dentist in the same year. Smile Health partners include Cigna Healthcare, Colgate Palmolive Company, and Delta Dental. A Chicago restaurant is making headlines for ditching servers so that it can better compensate back-of-house staff members. John's Food and Wine in Lincoln Park doesn't employ traditional servers or waitstaff. According to Cranes, guests use a kiosk at the restaurant's main counter to order food, and then a host guides them to their seats. They can order more drinks using a QR code at the table. The owners say rising business costs, including a higher minimum wage, push them to use the new model of service. The restaurant's hoping the system creates efficiencies and allows it to better compensate back-of-house workers. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thank you, and let's begin by checking in with Elmer Fudd. What's up, Elmer?
I'm waiting for the Easter Wabbit.
Well, Elmer, you missed it. The Easter Wabbit, or bunny as most of us refer to it, came yesterday. And why do we have that tradition? We will find out after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, Easter and the bunny and the eggs and the candy and the whole thing. It got started centuries before Christianity showed up.
Originally, it was a holiday that celebrated a Germanic goddess, the Saxon goddess Esther, or Easter.
Anne Eflin is a history buff at the USDA.
And she was the goddess of spring and fertility.
And eggs are all about fertility.
The Persians and Egyptians actually exchanged eggs that were decorated in spring colors as a way of celebrating the spring. The early Christians sort of adopted that.
Well, that helps explain why we dye Easter eggs, but how do those eggs magically show up on Easter morning?
Here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail.
Yeah, that bunny tradition goes again back to ancient Germany.
The German story is that there was a poor woman who had decorated eggs for her family to find during a famine, and that I think they were to sort of identify which were their eggs, and they had to search for them and find them. They found this nest of eggs and looked up. They saw a rabbit hopping away, and that's how they decided the rabbit had brought the eggs.
And this evolved into a tradition where kids would hide their hats and bonnets around the house or yard, and supposedly the bunny would leave eggs in them. But how did we get to candy eggs?
The transition from eggs to candy seems to have been the result of an advertising campaign near the end of the 1800s by a European candy company as a means of selling their candy Easter eggs.
Oh, so we can blame the marketer for taking Easter further and further away from how it started. On the food calendar, today's National Sourdough Bread Day. Got some starter you want to share? I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Talk a little bit about the restaurant scene in Chicago. If you've eaten at Roots Pizza or a number of other locations in Chicago, you've been to one of the 50-50 Group places. Mark Braver is a partner with 50-50 Group. Mark, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great, John. Thanks for having me on.
Let's talk a little bit about the hospitality consulting business, which you all are getting into now. What's this about?
Well, we've been in business as a restaurant and bar group for about 16 years, and recently we had the opportunity to acquire a consulting business, Corgan Hospitality, from Ken McGarry. And so we felt like at this point in time for us, this was a great time to enter the consulting business. We've got a wealth of experience on our team, and we've been friends and admirers of Ken for quite some time. So when the opportunity came up to merge our businesses, we jumped at it.
So tell me what that would be like then. Your managers, you would actually consult with other restaurant groups, some of them in Chicago. Who's the client base for this?
Sure. The client base currently is other restaurateurs, although we aim to expand that outside of the restaurant industry. And we provide guidance to them alongside our group's other business sectors focused on consumer hospitality. Clients who work with us get the benefit of the expertise of not only our entire leadership team, including our principals and founders, Greg Moore and Scott Weiner, but from a network of operators across all of our ventures who each can bring specialized skills in strategic planning, operational management, and leadership training.
How's the restaurant business in Chicago right now?
It's great. You know what? We had a rough couple of years, obviously, coming out of the pandemic, but things are really turning around at this point, and we're looking forward to an incredible summer season, which, as everybody knows, is the hot season in Chicago. We're enjoying what we're doing and looking forward to the summer.
What's the big challenge in the business these days? Is it staffing? Is it cost of food? What's the challenge?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, staffing was a big problem when people were making a lot of career changes coming out of the pandemic. That's subsided, at least for us. We seem to be able to staff pretty easily at this point. You know, profit margins, I think, are probably the biggest issue facing any restaurateur at this point. Obviously, cost of goods has risen with inflation over the last couple of years. Cost of labor is going up. And so being able to strategize and operationalize ways to make sure that we're profitable in a historically low margin business is what we're focused on.
Well, if you consult with a hospitality group, what advice do you give? What either mistakes are they making or what are the keys to success in that business?
Sure. I think what we find as we've been consulting with some independent clients recently is that sometimes when people get into the restaurant business, they're solely focused on, you know, putting out a great product, whether it's food or beverage, service, ambiance. But there's a whole lot more to running a restaurant or a bar than those things. And those things are massive undertakings in and of themselves. But the operation behind all of that is where some people require some more guidance.
Like what?
There's a lot going on.
What are you talking
about there?
Give me an example of that.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not just about food and beverage. There's a big finance and accounting aspect to it. Operations, including management of your property, repairs and maintenance. There's a lot of hidden pieces to the restaurant business, and we think that we're uniquely positioned to help guide other operators and help them navigate some of those some of the things that we've experienced ourselves in the past.
Yeah, I suppose everybody has. I'm thinking of various scenes or episodes from The Bear where holy cow, they got to rebuild the kitchen, or they've just got either permit issues or mechanical issues, and it's not just about the food, it's about operating a business.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully what you see as a guest is the theater part that we can invite you into our places, serve you a great meal with great service, and you don't ever have to see all of those operational headaches that we go through behind the scenes. But that's what our consulting business is about. It's helping other operators navigate those issues that they may not have experience with or hadn't anticipated.
Yeah. I just wonder, though, are you in a position then as an owner of as a group of restaurateurs, but also as a consultant, will you possibly be telling your competition how to do a better job and cut into your business?
Well, we'll definitely be telling our competition how to do a better job. But in the hospitality business, you know, we always say the more the merrier. You know, the more thriving restaurants there are in Chicago, New York, or wherever we operate, the better for us. We want guests going out and having a great time, and we realize they're not going to be at our spots 100% of the time. So if we can help make, you know, the entire industry a little bit better and uplift some of our neighbors, that works just great for us.
You know, I feel that way about my business, too. I mean, I want to be the best radio station in Chicago, but I think we have a better chance of being viable if there's other good radio stations in Chicago, right?
Agreed. And I think that's probably true for a lot of industries. You know, of course, we have competitors, but we want our friends and competitors to do well. We want us all to do well. So that's in that spirit. That's kind of the spirit behind our consulting business, is to uplift everybody.
Yeah. Mark Braver is a partner with 50/50 Group, and it's more than just that now. You can find out more at the50group.com, The 50 Group, Mark Braver. Nice to talk to you, Mark. Good luck. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, John. Take care.